Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The answer is yes. I am, in fact, laboring on Labor Day. Isn't that what it means? It's Labor Day weekend, and so we labor. I hope that you've enjoyed your weekend so far. For those of you who are in the middle of your Labor Day weekend and you've got Monday off, well, that's great. I actually don't mind working holidays, and I have shared this theory with you before. If I'm going to be home, I would rather trade typical night with a brutal New York City commute for one in which I can drive home after the show and make it about 7 minutes faster than what is normal for me because there is no traffic. For those of you who work in big cities or you have to deal with commutes in some of the major cities in the U.S., yeah, you know that it can be a bear. And people say to me sometimes, oh, but you're opposite traffic. Yeah, in New York City, there's no opposite traffic. There's just traffic. That's just how it goes. And so even on weekday mornings, when I am leaving Manhattan and driving out to New Jersey where I live, it's still brutal traffic. So I am excited because in 4 hours, I can walk out the door, be down to Princess Leia at street level, and be in my driveway 7 minutes faster than I normally am and not have to deal with the stress of a morning commute. That alone is worth working on a holiday. Now, I don't generally have the same schedule anymore when it comes to holidays because of the hubs. And so he decided to work Monday as well. So he will be working from home while I am sleeping. We had our Labor Day cookout on Sunday. You know what? If I only married the man for his grilling skills, I would already be in much better shape. Wait until I tell you what we had for our Labor Day weekend cookout. We had a neighbor over, and the neighbor brought... Yep, here. Are you ready for this? Here it comes. The neighbor brought cannolis in honor of me seeing The Godfather for the first time in August. So he brought the cannolis and he dropped the line, leave the gun, take the cannolis. Had to say that when I welcomed him into our home. But he knows us well and he knew we were going to see The Godfather. So good stuff. It was a good Sunday. I taught my kiddos at church on Sunday morning and was home then to clean up a little bit, get ready for company, and prep the food. I did the food prep and washed the dishes. And, oh, I made a Mexican corn salad, actually, too, which is always a big hit. But the hubs did the rest. So for those of you who are doing cookouts on Monday, I hope that yours is as tasty as ours and that you have as many leftovers as we do. Boy, do we cook a lot of food. So we'll get to that. But I am not hungry now. What is, let's see, we finished eating around 4:30 Eastern time. So almost 10 hours ago, and I'm still not hungry. I had a few goldfish, but that's it. I didn't bring many snacks, so let's hope that my stomach does not start growling overnight. For those of you who are big into college football, and they're off. Man, what a weekend. Really did enjoy some of the college football. Also had a chance to see the new movie Reagan, in which Dennis Quaid plays the former president who passed away from Alzheimer's. Of course, once his presidency was done, he lived out the last 10 years of his life with Alzheimer's. And the movie was really well done. It was funny because we went to a matinee just because it fit our schedule with football games and whatever else we wanted to do. We decided we would save some money and go to a matinee. And so we did. And the theater was pretty full. And we had to be among the youngest people in the theater. Which was okay. I didn't mind. It was actually pretty cool. I've not seen, and this is not at all a knock on senior citizens, my mom rarely goes to movies anymore. She just doesn't really want to go to the theater. But that that theater that we sat in on Saturday afternoon was at least half full of senior citizens. And there was a lot of interaction. So I normally go see the big bang up movies, Star Wars, Top Gun, Jurassic World. I go see those types of movies in theaters. Oh, the new Twisters movie we saw in IMAX. So we really do, or I am used to going to movies and theaters that have a lot of explosions, fight scenes, flight scenes, that kind of stuff. Not usually a movie like this one, which is a biopic about the former president. But we decided we would go. We wanted to see it as soon as it came out. It's amazing. I really enjoyed it. Regardless of your politics, I think you would enjoy the movie. Dennis Quaid is a really good actor. But the fact that the theater was full and half full of seniors, and also the fact that it was very interactive, meaning there was a lot of people like reacting to what they saw on the screen. And then at the end, they play an entire montage of photos from the president's life, President Nancy Reagan, and you can see how the photos were used for scenes in the movie. And so they tried to stick very close to what they knew about the former first couple. And they also, so they used not just a bunch of photos, but some video. They played the video of his funeral at the end of the movie. That was kind of how the movie ended, as the credits were going before the photos. And when the movie was done and they showed all the photos of his life, there was cheering in the theater. So how about that? The seniors were cheering. So yes, we apparently were part of an early bird special. My mom loves early bird specials. She and her husband, they like to eat dinner at 4:30 in the afternoon, which just blows me away. But she says she wants to eat early to avoid the crowds. Okay. I know. She lives in Houston. She doesn't like traffic. Anyway, they go early to avoid the crowds, or she sends her husband out to get takeout so that she doesn't have to go anywhere. So I felt like I was in an early bird special on Saturday in the movie theater. All that to say, I couldn't care less, because we saved a lot of money by going to an earlier movie. And it was actually kind of fun to be there with what I would say is an atypical movie crowd. So it was a good movie. Maybe I'll share some more thoughts about it. But it was inspiring. It was hopeful. And as someone who remembers, well, there are a lot of things I didn't know and didn't remember about President Reagan leading up to what was his second term. That's really the first presidency that I was cognizant of, when he beat Walter Mondale in a landslide. First one I can remember, first political memory really that I have as a kid. And so it was kind of fun to take that walk down memory lane. But I also remember very vividly Mr. Gorbachev tear down that wall, referring to the wall that divided East and West Berlin. And to see, again, to hear that, but also to see some of those images play out again on the screen was pretty amazing. So all of that packed into a weekend, plus college football and baseball and the WNBA and the run-up to the NFL. And of course, a couple of tragic headlines and tragic stories as well. I am with many of you who reached out to me or who I know felt the same about, tragic doesn't even do it justice, the unfathomable death of Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau on Friday. Well, I guess it was Thursday night? It was Thursday night. We found out Friday morning. And by now, you've probably seen, read, heard some of the details. A man who was likely driving drunk, failed a field sobriety test and was arrested, tried to pass a vehicle that was going slower than he was. And what he didn't realize or didn't see, or maybe because he was inebriated, didn't care. The reason the vehicle in front of him was going slower is because there were two men on bicycles who were in the lane in front of that vehicle. And so as this allegedly drunk driver swerved around the vehicle in front of him. He plowed right into Johnny and Matthew on their bicycles and killed them both. And not only do they leave behind wives and in Johnny's case, two children who are under the age of two. In Matthew's case, a wife who is pregnant with their first child, who is due in December, a little boy. I believe they've already named him. I think I read his name as well. But they leave behind a family who was gathered in the Philadelphia area for their sister Katie's wedding. And both of those young men, Johnny and Matthew, were supposed to stand up with their sister the next day at her wedding. And as someone who just went through a wedding, my husband and I were talking about it and trying to imagine how devastating and unthinkable it would be to find out the night before our wedding, in which we had a family gathering, a big family dinner, to find out that now both of us have two brothers. So each of us have two brothers, and of course they were all at the wedding, to find out that we had lost two siblings. I read that the wedding was canceled. As you can imagine, there would be no going through with it at that point, but to have such a joyful occasion and your family is all together, and you're hours away from walking down the aisle, thinking about it from Katie's perspective, and then to get a call. I can't even imagine what that was like. Hearing that both of her brothers were gone. Of course, the wedding in that moment becomes not as important, but it goes from being this joyful occasion, this buildup, this excitement, this anticipation, family all together, to utter devastation and pain and grief and confusion and anger and all of those things. Now, obviously the reaction was swift, and we heard from the family as well as teammates of Johnny's in Columbus, other athletes around the United States. And there's really no making sense of it. But even as I think about that situation and try to process the pain of all of that, I continue to think about the ways that drunk driving have impacted the sports world in the last just 2-3 years, and the tragedies that have unfolded because people are getting behind the wheel and driving when they shouldn't be. It blows me away that it happens. I, of course, understand that it does. But as someone who's lost a friend, a very good friend, to a drunk driver, he actually was on a scooter, not on a bicycle, but he got hit by a drunk driver and died at the scene. It hits home. And I'm sure many of you feel the same way. But again, just to think about that family and their celebration and the fact that they will never be the same. That family will never be the same. And not just one, but two brothers gone just like that. Professional athlete or no, again, it's really hard to process, hard to stomach. And so we prayed for the family over the weekend, thinking of them, and maybe at some point we'll hear from them again, but just awful to think about. And then on the heels of that, on Saturday, we find out that rookie wide receiver Ricky Pearsall of the San Francisco 49ers gets shot in an attempted robbery. He was in the Union Square area of San Francisco. And according to authorities, a 17-year-old A 17-year-old attempts to rob him, ends up shooting him. According to Ricky's mom, the bullet goes through his chest and comes out his back. So it's a through and through. And his mom used the term lucky to describe him because he's already out of the hospital. How about that? A lot of times these stories, these headlines don't come with a positive or a happy ending, if you will. And I know that's being a little bit trite. But he's already out of the hospital. He'd been listed in serious but stable condition. He was upgraded to fair condition on Sunday. And then he was released from the hospital and trauma center in San Francisco later on Sunday. Again, she called her son extremely lucky and said the bullet exited out of her son's back and missed his vital organs. I dare say that with 10 of these shots, it probably wouldn't happen the majority of the time. The 17-year-old did get arrested. This is in broad daylight, 3:30 in the afternoon on Saturday. The suspect tried to rob him. They're calling him a juvenile. I have not seen his name anywhere. I guess that's not important. But here's what the rookie was doing. He's 23 years old, by the way. He was signing autographs. And when he got done, he was walking to the Union Square area. And in broad daylight, he ends up getting shot by a 17-year-old. I mentioned earlier that our studios are in New York City. We drive in 5 nights a week. And there's a major spike in crime in this city. I hear the stories all the time. I told you just, 3 weeks ago, we had a woman who comes into work, I don't know, a couple hours after I do, get attacked on the sidewalk out in front of our building by someone in a mask. For those of you who live and work in big cities, maybe you've seen a spike in the crime in your cities too, but this is broad daylight. And it's happening in a lot of places, which is scary and also sad. So don't know a lot more details, only that he has now been released from the hospital. And his mom is indicating that the bullet was a through and through and missed his vital organs, which is good. We'll hear from the San Francisco mayor a little bit later. But yeah, that's part of the weekend, the downside, the tragic, the headlines that scare you half to death when you read them and break your heart when you process or try to process them. You can find me online at A-Law Radio. Of course, always enjoy hearing from you. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, many of you wrote in with your must-haves at the Labor Day cookout. We have leftovers from our Labor Day cookout, so don't you worry. You won't be teasing me. Also, I can't believe it's September 1st. What pastor said that on Sunday? Happy September. And there were some audible groans, which I thought was interesting. I like September. I'm okay with it. I think there are a lot of people who don't want to say farewell to summer. And summer is still officially here for a few more weeks. But in terms of routine, work, school, vacations, all of that, September signals back to business. It also signals the start of a real chaotic, hectic, but generally engaging stretch in sports. I do appreciate the fall for all of those reasons, plus pumpkin everything. I'm one of those people. So at A-Law Radio, and then our Facebook page, our phone number 855-212-4227. Coming up, we'll dive into college football. Also, you may remember when the Indiana Fever started the season 3-10 And there was a fairly loud call for Christy Side's head on a platter. Okay, not that dramatic, but there were a lot of people asking that the coach of the Fever get fired. That was in mid-June. Oh, how things have changed. Thanks for hanging out with us. If you're out of your regular routine, you've never heard the show before, or you're hanging out for the first time in a long time, again, we'd love to hear from you at A-Law Radio. And then on Facebook, it's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
If you were with us last week, you may remember we asked you who deserves to be the WNBA Rookie of the Year. Well, the votes were in, and according to After Hours listeners and then those of you who follow along on social, 88%, roughly 88%. We're in favor of Caitlin Clark as the WNBA Rookie of the Year. And many of you even pointed to her as being the WNBA MVP. I would say we're probably not there yet because we've got some pretty impressive performances this season across the board in the league. However, there is no denying the impact that Clark and Reese have had on the league. And now, for Caitlin Clark and the Fever, they've got their sights set on postseason. What? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. First, to give you the case for Angel Reese, she is now the record holder for the most rebounds in a single season, rookie or veteran. She finished with 19 boards on Sunday. That gives her 418 in this season through 32 games. Now, the WNBA just went to a 40-game regular season last year, so they do have eight more games. However, she beat the previous record in 32 games. And actually, that previous record was set by Sylvia Fowles, former LSU star herself, like Angel Reese. She had the record back in 2018, and she did it in 34 games. So there's no saying that this Angel Reese record isn't legit or that she needed more games to get to it. No, it matters, and it counts, even if it was in game number 40. But with 19 of them on Sunday, we know she also set the record for most consecutive double-doubles. And she stands alone at the top of the WNBA's rebounding record books. By the way, she's heard what people have said about her and the fact that she's really only rebounding her own misses. She can't shoot, so that's why there are more rebounds. She's keeping receipts.
Yeah, I mean, coming into it, I mean, I just knew my motor. Offensive rebounds and defensive rebounds is something that I know I can always do. I knew it was going to translate right away, and that's something that a lot of players don't want to do. A lot of people think it's because I get my own rebounds, but statistically it's not. A lot of people think it's because I'm the tallest on the court when I'm not the tallest on the court. So just being able to go down there and being able to bang, doing things that a lot of people don't want to do. Defense and rebounding wins championships, and I've won championships at every level by just doing that. So coming into the league, before I sharpen up on my offensive thing, just being able to come in and have that on my shoulder is something I can always do. It's something that I knew would translate.
There is no doubt that she has made an impact. If you see how defenses have to game plan for her, she's a voracious rebounder. And so you can try to say it's only because she misses a bunch of shots, but that's, as she points out, not even close to being the majority of her 418 rebounds. And she still has eight games to go. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, as we're talking about the WNBA, the playoff standings, why are we talking about those? Well, because the Indiana Fever have now climbed the standings to the point where they are middle of the pack and in line for a playoff spot. This is something that many fans would have scoffed at. The idea would have seemed absurd going back to mid-June when they started 3-10. But in a league of a dozen teams, they are now in the sixth spot. And how about this? Above 500 for the first time in 5 years. Now, Christy Sides hasn't been there that entire time. I believe she's in her second year as the head coach of the Indiana Fever. But after starting out 3-10, the Fever have rattled off 14 wins to just 6 losses. And they're the best team in the WNBA since the Olympic break. They are 6-1 since the Olympic break, 3 of those victories coming on the road. So they are a much better team than the one that started the season and really was coming up short. Even though the Fever were keeping it close, they were coming up short. They were turning the ball over a lot. They weren't in sync. They weren't in rhythm. They didn't know each other well. And you may remember that Coach Sides railed against the fact that their early schedule was stacked against tough opponents like the Connecticut Sun, the New York Liberty. On national TV, they had a ton of games, 8 games in 12 days before they really had a chance to practice. And with one of the youngest teams in the league, she needed that time to practice. They needed that time to get to know each other. So they were 3-10 in mid-June. They're 14-6 since then. But we had talked about this. I put it out there on social. There's no doubt that Caitlin benefited from having the 3 weeks off. That Olympic break was exactly what she needed. Would she have been a welcome addition to the U.S. women's team? Of course. But what she really needed was a break. She looks physically and mentally recharged and locked in. She's averaging, I think, 24 points and 8 or 9 assists in the 7 games since the break. She's shooting better from beyond the arc. You may remember she hasn't shot real well, not what people expected of her in her rookie year in the WNBA, obviously facing better defense. But that 3 weeks off, I think she took a full week off and then they were practicing and working out, but no games for 3 weeks. That was the first time she'd had that kind of a break since before her senior year at Iowa, because the season went into the Final Four, went into the draft, went right into preseason and then regular season games. So everything happens for a reason. That's what I believe. She clearly needed the time off, and now she's tearing it up. 5 triples on Sunday, so 28 points and a dozen assists as the Fever hit 100 points again, this one in Dallas on Sunday. That's coming off a career-high 31 on Friday, also on the road. She and Kelsey Mitchell have a terrific connection. So 36 points for Kelsey. And here's the good news. In addition to all of that, after fighting through this stretch where they have a bunch of road games, they've got the LA Sparks coming up this week, I think Wednesday. They have 6 straight home games beginning with that one, which is huge. So yeah, she's on fire. She will, as I look up on MLB Network, and there's a commercial featuring Caitlin Clark. I think it's for Gatorade. Oh yeah, definitely for Gatorade. On MLB Network. That's how popular she is. She sells anything and everywhere. My mom is still sending me text messages, letting me know when the Fever win, letting me know sometimes how many points Caitlin has or how many assists she has. Yeah, she's definitely changed the league. But not just that, she's changed the Fever. She and Aaliyah Boston, who's the rookie from last year, Lexi Hall, Kelsey Mitchell, they've got a much better rhythm and flow, and they've got great energy. And according to Kelsey, part of the reason that they're playing so well is because they are able to push the tempo. They're able to get up and down the court. And you'll see that. You'll see that Caitlin, as well as Kelsey, always have their heads up and are looking down court.
Me and Caitlin, as well as our group, I think we've just found a way to, for one, understand and know one another. But I think our pace is just kind of setting us apart from a lot of different teams, because we like to get, you know, the ball up and down the court at such a high pace. And I think the way that we play just kind of like, it just makes our games thrive even more.
Our focus is just finding ways to get a little bit better every day, taking what we need from this game. Because we're going to face them again in a week and a half. And you know, these guys are just growing together, building confidence in each other.
Oh, big breath at the end there. We cut her off. We were done. It was hard to hear the voice. I'm just kidding.
She needs Gatorade.
Good for you, Christy Side. She does. She needs some Caitlin Clark Gatorade. All right. As for Caitlin, she clearly has gotten more adept at navigating the defenses, and now she's got the upper hand, as I say, with her head up, able to deliver those full court passes either through the air or like a touchdown. Or the ones that I love to watch are the ones that bounce perfectly right between two defenders who are running in different directions, helter-skelter, and the ball is in front of them. It would be offsides if it was soccer. The ball is in front of them before the defense knows what hit it. So they do this a lot in transition. And clearly you can tell that from where she started to where she is now, she's much more capable and comfortable against the best women's basketball players in the country.
I understand the game better, more comfortable with my teammates, more comfortable on the floor. I think just playing a little more free, I think being more aggressive. I think all of that kind of combined.
Well, it's a lot of fun to watch. I'm happy for her, happy for her team. It's clear that they enjoy playing together. Even in their post-game press conferences, they're laughing. There was one moment and a comment from one of her teammates. I think this was late last week, where her teammates talked. One of her teammates said something about grabbing balls, and they all peeled away in giggles, and Caitlin was right there in front, chuckling away. So yeah, acting like little kids, having fun, enjoying their basketball. They're fired up. You should see the bench when they do something well. Christy Sides is running up and down the sideline in front of the bench, and the team is all up. I mean, they've got all the signs of a roster of chemistry and cohesion, and certainly winning helps a lot. But they stuck together after starting out 3-10 and feeling the heat and feeling the pressure there. Just took a little time. No team starts the year ready to win a championship. I'm not saying that they are that team, but I am telling you right now they're above 500 for the first time in 5 years, and they're in line to clinch a playoff spot sometime in the next couple weeks, which is awesome. Fever fans rewarded for showing up at every single game that she's played and selling out arenas all over the country. At A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, we're going to get to your calls coming up here, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. By the way, this happened to Bob on Sunday. I asked him whether or not he had joined Survivor Island. He told me he tried, but the link was invalid. What does that mean? And then it dawned on me, you all have filled up another island in our archipelago. And so we established a new island, credit to former producer Jay. I reached out to him on Sunday and said, help, I need a new island. And he sent me the link right away for a new island. So if you haven't yet joined our Survivor pool, we call it Survivor Island, just days before the NFL season kicks off, asking you to join us. The link is up on my Twitter as well as pinned to the top of our Facebook page. So you're looking for the latest link. Okay, so check it out. It's also on the Infinity Sports Network, Twix. So you can find it there as well. Easy, right? Just whether it's our show account, whether it's our Facebook page, we don't want you to miss out. Remember, you're picking one winner. That's it. I had to tell Bob multiple times, just pick one, just pick one, save your pick, save your pick, save your pick. It's astounding to me how many times we begin a season and there are, I don't know, a couple hundred people that lose in week one because they didn't make a pick and they didn't save said pick. It's easy. It's easy. You just got to make one pick, one winner, save your pick. You can do this. I believe in you. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
But it doesn't really matter because they got four touchdowns already with 3:05 to go. Bam, in 2 minutes. Haynes again. Haynes in a foot race. Haynes beyond midfield. Haynes still turning. Haynes 10-5. Touchdown. Justice served 85 yards.
Bill
time. Fires across the middle. Catch is made. Williams breaks a tackle. Williams, two catches, two touchdowns, two electric early on. Ryan Williams, his second score. This one 55 yards, and with a minute 30 to go in the first half, another touchdown Alabama and a 41-0 lead.
Good to get a W to start the year. I told the guys downstairs, every win is something that they've worked hard for. And make sure we enjoy it. Go back to work. We got a lot of things that we now have on film that we know we can correct and understand the things that we're really good at and the things we need to continue to work on.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It is a new era at Alabama, and the Kalen DeBoer tenure starts out with quite a win. 63-0 over the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers. I know, not starting off like a Georgia Clemson, but a win is a win is a win is a win. And for the Bama faithful and Kalen DeBoer, this was a big deal. And man, some of the talent. You've seen Jalen Milroe with his three touchdowns through the air. Get this, he completed seven passes. Three of them were touchdowns. And then he ran for two more. So five total scores for the Bama quarterback. And how about Ryan Williams? Two catches. That's it. Just two catches. This is an efficient offense. Two catches, 139 yards, and a couple scores. And if you hadn't heard, this young man is 17.
It's impressive that a guy, you know, his age can go out there and do the things he's doing. You know, obviously we've talked a lot about him. He's got a bright future and really fun to see him go out there and make those plays that he did tonight. So the guys believe in him, and he's just done. I think one of the cool things about Ryan is he's gone about it. You know, a lot of attention gets thrown his way, but he's just gone about it and really humble and just, you know, matter of fact, stay the course type of just go to work every type of day attitude.
Kalen DeBoer talking about his 17-year-old budding superstar. But yeah, he has already made an impact on Alabama. The call with Chris Stewart on Alabama radio from Learfield. And that's just barely the tip of the iceberg. A lot more college football, including why Brian Kelly is really angry on Sunday night. So we'll do a lot more of this first full weekend in college. And my husband said to me, why are they playing on Sunday? Well, you'll generally get a game or two on Sunday that's not high profile, except for this first weekend. And the reason they throw a game up like USC LSU on a Sunday is because the NFL hasn't kicked off yet. You won't see that moving forward. Once the NFL starts, most sports do not want to tangle. They don't want to put their best product up against the NFL. 855-212-4227. Chico is in Baltimore. Welcome to After Hours.
How you doing?
I'm good, sir.
Speaking of college football, and sorry to hear about all this down stuff, do you feel that they're going to probably have more security now at college football games with not storming the field after games and stuff after what happened at Duke with college basketball?
I think that the lack of security is not the issue. If you've got a mob of that size, like fills a college football stadium, when people decide they're going to rush the field, it's really hard to stop them unless you're going to get trampled, right? So this happens at soccer stadiums all over the world. It's not a lack of security. It's that once people go crazy and decide they're going to rush the field, they're going to do what they want.
Remember 4 years ago, we couldn't do that during COVID. Remember, they didn't allow people in stadiums, remember?
No, I've forgotten all about that.
That's right. People forget that 4 years ago, then during COVID, that could be a super spreader. And then seeing what happened with Alabama last year in Tennessee, they don't want to go through the same with the goalpost and replacing that. And then you got to think about player safety because I don't know, years ago, you remember Miami of Ohio and Marshall, the coach knocked one of the fans out because after they rushed the field and was drunken. got those drunk fans and stuff. You know, they got to think about this safety.
Yeah, well, for me, that's the far bigger issue. I get it. These are goalposts that cost a lot of money, and you don't want to see fans tarnishing and trashing your field and your stadium. But for me, it's really always about player safety, whether it's on a field, whether it's on a court, wherever it happens to be. If a player or a coach gets injured, that is the part that to me is really dangerous. And I would hope fans would be cognizant of that. But again, you're talking about mixing thousands and thousands of people with alcohol in many cases, and that fire and excitement over a big win, especially if it's an upset, I don't know how much security in the world could stop them.
What if Michigan were to lose a game? Do you think on the road, do you think that they'll probably have a sign saying not to rush the field?
I'm sure there are many signs that say don't rush the field.
I don't blame them because they said, I heard COVID might be making a comeback. I don't know if you've heard about it.
No, I couldn't care less. Thank you, though. I appreciate your phone call. Yeah, I'm sure they post signs all over the place and also on the large screens around the stadium to not rush the field. But when you have fans who are determined and, again, not in full possession of their senses and fired up and excited, I know that people believe it's an issue of security, but honestly, I'm not sure how many security guys or gals you're willing to put out there unless you're going to start macing people. We certainly don't want security people to have weapons out in crowds of that size. They're going to do what they're going to do. You hope that the students and the fan bases do not, maybe have a little more respect for the athletes and the coaches that are on the field. But if they decide they're going to get down there on the playing surface, well, that's where they're going to go. And they're going to come pouring over the barriers. They're going to overwhelm people. And we just saw it with, it was soccer, right? Not that long ago in Miami. Was it in Miami where that happened? Yeah, as part of Copa America. And there's not a whole lot that security can do. Again, you don't want them pulling weapons in a crowd like that, in a mob like that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.